Marini's Media.
This is the Totally Football League show, where this week we've offered up Sam Parkin to the ceremonial manager gods of Blackpool. You're welcome. They came for Wellens, they said no. They came for Robinson, they said no. And Parkin's not here, coincidence? I think not, except it's not. As Blackpool now rocks to Neil Critchley's beat, which was all a convoluted way of shoehorning in one music reference so we could start the show with a Sabri sing-song.
Sabri Lamouchi, you little beauty. You were the star of Chapmanage in 98. I used to sign you, and now we find you in the championship and doing really great. You came to Forest, and if I'm honest, I thought you'd drink the poison chalice, man, you tried. But you were brighter, you made them tighter, and now you've gotten all of Nottingham aside.
Life sounds so much better in the key of Benjamin Bloom with Sabri Lamouchi, you little beauty. You can watch and hear more of that online. Singing to his own tune, Adrian Clark's here.
Hi.
Hitting the high notes, Simon Watts is here. And the right keys in the wrong places for William Hill, Joe Critty. Except that's fake news, Joe, because you're off to choir practice tonight.
That's a secret. Shh, oh. Don't tell everybody.
Can you give us a little song?
No.
Oh, go on.
Absolutely not.
No, really?
No.
Oh. I will keep asking you throughout.
When's the show?
Never you mind, Adrian Clark.
Is there actually a show?
I bet there's a show.
There's always a show.
I just went for choir practice.
No. There's always a show.
So what's the show about?
I don't know. I tend to meet up beforehand in the pub.
Oh.
Things happen
so
around me, and then I go to the pub afterwards. So
yeah, the birth of Arsenal Football Club, the birth of your song career, singing. Yeah. As it were.
You'd never have Joe Crilly down as a choir singer, would you? Oh, ever?
You heard me at karaoke, albeit doing Dr. Dre.
No memories of that karaoke.
Now we've embarrassed you. Simon Watts, the tiniest writing in football journalism.
Yes. I had a long night last night, so lots of notes written.
I used to do that as a kid. I used to make up, oh, this is my sad life. I'm not going to tell you. I'm just not going to tell you. If you won't sing, I won't tell them about my sad life. So much going on then around the EFL. Let's get straight into the championship.
You're listening to the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill.
We have a title race. I repeat, we have a title race. After Wigan beat West Brom at the Hawthorns and Leeds thumped Hull 4-0, that's just a point between the Baggies and the Whites at the top. In the playoffs, it's all as you were last week, table-wise. Fulham, Forest, Brentford, Preston, just 5 points separate. Preston in sixth and Cardiff in 11th. So the old all to play for in that. Middlesbrough missed the chance on Monday night to leave the relegation zone. There's a little bit of controversy in that, so maybe I won't talk about it. The piece of creativity happened between Reading and Barnsley at the weekend.
Yedon tries to get it back for Puskas, and now Yedon wins a diving header on the ground, and it's given as a foul. I didn't think that Yedon should have been penalised for that launch with his head bravely on the deck.
It was really brave.
How's that a foul? That's not a foul.
I don't understand why the referee stopped it.
It's madness, but it's not a foul.
No.
But a sour note, as Leeds keeper Kiko Casilla has been banned for 8 matches after being found guilty of using racially abusive language towards Jonathan Lecco of Charlton. 10 matches to go then. There is a thing of beauty that is on the interweb about the little known rules that could decide the bottom of the championship. But I'm not allowed to talk about it yet as much as I want to, because we're going to start with West Brom 0, Wigan 1. Wigan, it's all about the away form, right? Things turn around for them, Simon.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible, isn't it? 4 wins in 45 matches and then 4 wins out of their last 6. Watching the performance as well, they fully deserved it. I mean, you know, they hit the post. It was a real end-to-end game. I think from a West Brom perspective, they've given themselves a little bit of distance and the teams below them seem to be stumbling enough for them to kind of afford a loss like that. But from a Wigan point of view, I watched their game at Reading last week as well when they won 3-0. And given the fact that they lost Shea Dunkley to that horrible injury, injury, the broken leg. Looks like he's going to be out for a long time. And let's not forget, he's their top scorer this season as well. So useful in both boxes. I mean, it's crazy at the bottom of the championship, isn't it? And a great story as well for Sam Morsy, because he's from Wolverhampton, was let go by Wolves as a teenager, and then pops up with the winning goal there. And interesting as well, he's been on 9 bookings since Christmas and was given the captain's armband. And since then, he hasn't picked up one. Obviously, a 2-game ban for him unless he avoids it until the end of March. And I noticed this with Rob Dickey at Oxford. They did exactly the same thing, and he's kept clean. So is this a managerial tactic I've never known before? A player's on 9 bookings, give him the armband, and then they stop getting booked.
Abby, can I talk about points now? Because he's brought up bookings, and that does count towards what could possibly happen at the bottom of the table. Yes, good. She's got no influence. So on that, right, only 3 points separate Stoke, Charlton, Huddersfield and Hull. 10 games remaining. Wigan and Middlesbrough caught up in it as well. Stoke on Trent Live is a great place to go and see this, but loads of other websites have got it. There's a reasonable chance then at least 2 of the clubs will end up the same number of points, same number of goals scored and same number of goals conceded. If they end up 21st and 22nd then, who stays, who goes? It could all come down to a points rules order of precedence. So it starts on points, then it's goal difference, then it's goals scored, then respective league record against each other, taking into account, you know, points, goal difference, goal scored, etc. Number of wins, goal scored in away games, lowest number of total penalty points. So we get to number 7 in the list and we come to penalty points.
What's a penalty point?
Oh, I hear you cry. So for a yellow card, 4 penalty points, which is as you were saying, so that all could come into it. Denying the opposing team a goal, obvious goal-scoring opportunity by a deliberate handball is another 10 penalty points. So it all racks up. There's all these things that could come into it. It's better than drawing lots, right? But it all gets a bit
messy.
What
about a playoff?
Yeah, can't you just have a playoff?
Yeah, that comes right down. Right down.
So penalty points are ahead of a playoff?
Spitting at an opponent or any other person is 12 penalty points. I don't know if that's just anyone or someone on the pitch. The playoff is number 9 in the list. Lowest number of sending off offences, which attract 12 penalty points, comes above playoffs.
Imagine getting relegated on a couple of bookings or a red card or something like that, especially if it's like a really contentious one. Surely it won't happen.
So you can't, they're trying to stamp out the Luis Suarez of this world.
Stamp out maybe not the right phrase to throw in. But I think that's right. Sort out the discipline. Oh, it's not going to happen, is it?
I just want to see a playoff.
Oh. Well, you've got to wait until there's other 8.
It's not going to happen, is it? I'm never going to get to stage 9, are we?
Go on then, talk about West Brom Wigan.
On that, by the way.
I enjoyed that, if no one else did.
On what Simon was saying, it's an interesting one, because when I was a captain later on in my career, when I was down in the National League, I definitely did get more pally with refs, because you kind of got a responsibility to get them on your side. It's a little bit sneaky, but you try and be a mate of the refs, because in those borderline moments, you never know. And you certainly don't want to be the guy that is constantly badgering the ref and annoying him. So I kind of get it.
Should you ever be addressed by a referee by your first name? Or should it be, if you're a player, or should it always be the number? No, Joe. No. So if I'm the referee and I'm about to talk to you, should I call you Joe, Crilly, or number 10?
I reckon Crilly.
Simon?
I reckon you want to be like a head teacher.
The more you get on with the referee on a human level, surely the more respect you get.
Should the referee be addressing the player on a first name term?
Yeah, no, I don't, no issue with that at all. To be honest, if they address me by my first name, I felt quite chuffed. Just like, oh, he knows me. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have any issue with that. I don't want to create a barrier between players and refs. I am definitely of the old school where you should be allowed to talk like grown-ups. And
why are you on this show?
Good point. Do you want to talk about Wigan?
Yeah, go on then.
No, really impressed with them. On that away form, they've got this amazing record of scoring first. So I think they've scored the opener on the road in 11 matches, and it's only lately that they've been able to convert those early goals into victories. So what's happened to change it? I think that they've revamped the defence a little bit. Balogun came in from Brighton. I think he's formed a really good partnership with Cedric Kiepre. And the keeper's playing well, I think, David Marshall. But I think now what's happening is just a snowball effect, isn't it? It's just confidence. 10 shots on target at Reading, the game that you were at. More possession than West Bromwich Albion at the Hawthorns, and having been there a few times this season, that's amazing, because West Brom love to just pass it around and for 5-10 minutes at a time and always go anywhere, but that's the way they are. So I think we're going to be fine. I've looked at their running as well. Three against the top half sides, seven against bottom half sides. It's all in their hands now.
Although saying that, how well they've done at West Brom and Leeds, give them as many top half sides as you like. Sorry, Sam.
No, I'm just saying I love Kiefer Moore. I've got a bit of a lower league obsession with Kiefer Moore. It's a great story. I know you talked about it on this programme already, coming from non-league and everything like that. But, I mean, he slipped in Jamal Lowe right on the full-time whistle there with a beautiful touch and ball through. And, yeah, he has a touch of the old school about him, but I think people underestimate him as a footballer as well. And, you know, I look at Ipswich that we're going to talk about later and how desperately they could need a player like that. You know, having had him on their books and developed him and now seeing him playing in the Championship with Wigan. And, you know, I think this is a player who's still got a top-end Championship move in him, to be honest.
And Jamal Lowe's done Hampton and Co and Harrow. He's another of those that's come through the ranks. So you kind of want to see them do well and stay up. Leeds then, 4-0 winners at Hull, kind of done and dusted. We've spoken a lot or heard a lot about that over the past few days. Can we talk, though, about Jude Bellingham? 16 years old, Birmingham City, and the latest whispers, he's been linked with Borussia Dortmund for some £30 million. If you're a young player, Adrian, would you head off to play in Borussia Dortmund? The initial talk was that he was going to Man United, wasn't it? Although a lot of the Premier League clubs were looking at him. Would you keep still plying your trade in the Championship?
It's a tough one. I certainly wouldn't be against going to Dortmund. I'd probably rather go to Dortmund than Manchester United in his shoes. I think the best thing for his immediate development would be to get bought and be loaned straight back to Birmingham, where he's got a home, he's a key part of the side now, and he's getting game time, guaranteed game time, and that's what you want to continue your development. What I will say about Dortmund is that they've got a proven track record of giving the kids a go. They love that style of player, the exciting, talented midfielders, doesn't matter what age you are. And look, if Sancho does come back, there's a little opening there, isn't there, for him? I certainly wouldn't advise him to go to Manchester United and then stay there, because I don't think he's quite ready for that step up yet. Or I don't think he'll get the opportunities, rather, at Manchester United that he might do in Germany.
The interesting thing is everyone's saying his younger brother is better than him.
Wow.
So could be another one perhaps on the way. Yeah, are you right? All dependent on whether Sancho's there as well, what happens with them. But all the rumours certainly that is a done deal for Jude Bellingham.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets, or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with.
Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
Relegation dogfights, then. Big matches down the bottom this weekend. Wigan Luton, Charlton Borough, Stoke Hull, Barnsley, Cardiff. You told me you were having sleepless nights over your Barnsley prep. Is that right?
Well, I happened to take a look at their last six games of the season. And
hang on, sleepless nights over prep? I only do it in the morning.
They're nothing.
I joke.
Their final three games of the season, away at Leeds, home to Nottingham Forest, and then they end the season away at Brentford. An ominous final three fixtures. But the three games before that are against Stoke, away, Luton away and Wigan at home. Teams in and around them as we stand in the table at the minute. But their league position shouldn't come as a massive surprise, because since Gerhard Struve has gone in there, they'd actually be 10th in the table if you began the season from the moment he took over, above Preston and Bristol City. So, yeah, they were beaten at Reading at the weekend, but I think they created 23 opportunities in that game. And by all accounts, but for the keeper, should have won that game. And their form, three wins in a row before that, you know, I know a lot of teams have found their form in the bottom three, as we've been talking about. But you know, Barnsley are a team that excite me. I like a lot of their players. Jacob Brown, I like Cordy Woodrow, and they're a team who I think are really upwardly mobile. And of all of those teams, are Wigan, Luton, I think they're the ones who could sustain it.
Yeah, we always look for who they've got, who's a striker that can maybe help them stay up. And you're right, they look like they're on their toes at the moment. They look like they're bouncing. Luton then, on the flip side of that.
Well, they've picked up, haven't they? They've changed their style. They're not as pretty as they used to be, that's for sure. They hung in there at the weekend, didn't they? I don't think they were I don't think they were the better side against Stoke. They had to withstand a bit of an early barrage. They got a bit of luck with the penalty and they pick up another point. I still think Luton are among the three weakest teams in the division. I think that up front is a big issue there as well with Barnsley. You feel like there's a bit more goals in them now.
Mm.
That they are regular. That isn't a one-off, by the way.
No.
Having 20 shots in a game. They've kind of made that a habit, Barnsley. So they're creating enough chances. Are Luton... I don't think so. Certainly not in open play. They're very dangerous from set pieces. So I'd still have them down in the bottom three by the end of the season. But there's no doubt that they've improved of late.
Luton go to Wigan then. Barnsley take on Cardiff at home. Completing that bottom three as it stands. Middlesbrough. We saw Steve Gibson come out this week. And does anyone want to label it a vote of confidence? Because it was so clear that he has every faith in Jonathan Woodgate and those lines, whatever happens. Whatever happens, he's backing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's all well and good standing by your manager and, you know, he's saying things like Jonathan's not the problem, he's going to stick with him no matter what. Signals certainly that Steve Gibson's aware of underlying problems at the football club that a new manager might not necessarily solve. However, fans vote with their feet and fans are going to be so vocal. You know, Middlesbrough are synonymous with booze at the full-time whistle, aren't they, really? And, you know, they're a team absolutely plunging at the minute. Haven't won since New Year's Day. I just think that this is a team... you've seen it with big teams before, haven't we? With the likes of Sheffield United and Leeds and Ipswich last season. You know, big clubs who are seemingly on paper too good to go down. I think Middlesbrough are that team this year. I can't see them getting out of it. Unless, you know, someone like Ravel Morrison, who was their January gamble, can suddenly find some form and he's only played a couple of times. You know, that's really, I think, their only hope.
They have, and I know we've spoken previously about conversations I've had with Jonathan Woodgate post-match and things, but he has always expressed what he's trying to do, and the fans in return have spoken about backing what he's trying to do, one of our own and all of the above. But he had this mitigating circumstances.
Yeah. I like the fact that they're backing him. I really do. And he's standing his ground with people like your good self and fighting his own corner, as he should do. I just feel like it's a big old job for him, and he's learning as he goes. He's definitely made mistakes as he goes. I think he's constantly changing the team. I have to say, pre-January, I thought they were absolutely fine. I thought they were playing like a mid-table team and they'd be okay. He lost his keeper. That was big. Mm. Centre-half got injured. That was big. Striker suddenly lost all of their form. That's obviously really important. And what he's left with is a lot of young players, really. And are they equipped mentally for what is going to be a relegation dogfight?
But again, that's not his fault, is it?
It's not. No, not necessarily his fault. No. I mean, what is his... it's hard because ultimately it's the player's responsibility. I would just say that he started out with a philosophy. He pretty much changed it, didn't he? He became much more pragmatic when results didn't pay off with the free-flowing football. And now I don't really know what Middlesbrough are. I think I've played for managers like this who are a little bit sometimes too emotional. And when you have a defeat, it's like, oh no, it's a disaster. Can't do that again. Now I'm going to try this. And you get in this cycle of trying something different almost every week. The players don't know whether they're coming and going. Mm. I think we're seeing that with Ipswich at the moment with Paul Lambert, with team selection being strange, players playing in different positions. So I think he's got himself into a pickle, and it feels like the job is a bit big for him at this stage. But I really do hope he turns it around and keeps them up and that he can be a manager in the long term.
Right, we'll get the odds from you, Joe, in just a minute. So gird your loins. Stoke, Charlton, Wigan, Hull. Adrian, Stoke lost three matches in 2020.
No, I think Stoke are going to be okay. I know that they're or thereabouts, but the form overall across the last 10 or 12 games under O'Neill has been pretty solid. They're up there in the top half of the form table. It's a more balanced team now. I think he's just got to work out who to play up front. Tyrese Campbell, I think the pace of him definitely gives them more possibilities to stretch opponents. But then you've got Vokes, who's very good in the air and a seasoned campaigner. So you've got to work that out. But I think they will be OK. And I think that they will beat Hull City this weekend. That is a huge, huge game. I think, talk about Middlesbrough being in bad shape. What about Hull? I mean, they are in absolute freefall.
Are you surprised by that, you two?
I mean, how's your luck? You lose your two best players in the January window, and then you lose Tom Eaves to injury for the rest of the season a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's you can only work with what you've got. And you know, again, you look at a manager there, Grant McCann, how much responsibility does he take, or how much is it those above him who've made the decisions to move those players on and not really replace them either? I think they 8 defeats out of their last 10. They were 250-1 to go down in January. They're 5-1 to go down now.
Yeah, since Jared Bowen scored the winner on New Year's Day, 8 defeats, 2 draws. Apart from the 4-4... they've scored 4 goals in 9 of those 10 games. 4 goals in 9 plus that 4-4. It's just, it's not good enough. I don't blame Grant McCann at all for this. He had a philosophy, a way of playing. It worked brilliantly on the counter-attack. And they've basically just robbed him of his two best counter-attacking players. And you look at the team now, you look at that 11 that he's picking, and I know that they're depleted by a lot of injuries. It looks League One. It really does. I don't think it's the team he's got right now. Is not championship quality, unfortunately, and I fear they will be sucked into it.
We shouldn't be surprised, though. Why did Nigel Atkins walk away in the summer without another job lined up? Why would you leave a championship club who he did well with last season at Hull? So why would you walk away? I mean, I think that says it all.
Hull in 18th on 41 points. So Middlesbrough occupy that third place in the relegation places. They're on 38 points. And then you've got Stoke, Charlton and Wigan in between there. So both of you, if I'm reading you right, you're saying out of those ones above that Hull are the ones that you fear most for?
I think Luton, Hull, and I still think Barnsley might go, but they'd be very unfortunate too.
They're the team that I, out of all of them down there, I don't want to go because I love what Lee Bowyer has done at Charlton Athletic. But I think it's so important that he keeps Lyle Taylor fit and Macaulay Bonn as well, because I look at their squad, he's absolutely maximising it, but they shouldn't even be where they are, really. They should be in the bottom three. And I saw them at Huddersfield on Saturday. They were spanked 4-0 and it was a right thumping. And I just fear they might just not have enough to stay over the dotted line.
I think they've got character, and I think that's that they're in the spirit of the gaffer, and I think that might just see them over the line. And they've got a quartet of strikers that they can choose from that are all goal scorers. They can all score at that level, so I think they'll score enough. It's clean sheets. I think they've only got 6 this season, which is like there's only 2 teams that have got fewer clean sheets. That's been their problem. And moving forwards, Lee Bowyer needs to strengthen that rear guard hugely for next season. I think they'll just survive.
Can I just put a little bit of gloss on before we get the odds from Joe? Well done to Charlton Athletic, by the way, and Portsmouth and Cambridge United. They all won the inaugural Community Project of the Year awards from the EFL. I mean, I know that's only one little bright spark, but you're right. I think they'll be okay. I think Charlton
open
will be okay.
Open top bus parade?
Yeah, I'm doing that. They deserve it.
Mourinho would count it, wouldn't he?
He really would, wouldn't he?
Well, I enjoyed it again. Joe, are they right? Who's staying up? Who's going down?
Well, the 3 favourites in the market at the moment are Luton at 1-5, Barnsley 1-3, and Charlton at 5-4. But it is really congested, as obviously the table shows. The odds are also reflecting that. Middlesbrough 9-4, so just behind Charlton there. Hull 5-2, Wigan 5-1, Stoke, Sheffield Wednesday, and Huddersfield all 8-1. I'm not sure what's going on with Sheffield Wednesday and potential points deduction. I think there's a deadline, isn't there, of April, so it may well roll into next season's points tally.
Rather than getting sucked into it.
Yeah, at which point that 8-1 looks ridiculously short. But
I do love the fact that we're all saying Huddersfield are okay and the Cowleys are the saviours of everything beyond. Championship done then, on to League One. Oh, look who's just popped into the studio. It's only producer Abby.
Hey, Caroline.
Now, Abby, I imagine that you're quite the creative kitchen. I don't know why, I just get that feeling.
You know what, Caroline, it's just some days, and I'm sure you get it too, when you're just bogged down looking at all the stats and scores from the EFL and just can't be bothered to cook, and you end up snacking before you know it. You've eaten half a block of cheese.
Chocolate. Never happened.
I don't know what I'm talking about. That was until, of course, that I came across HelloFresh, which has been an excellent life hack because I don't have to make any decisions in the kitchen anymore, but still get to cook yummy food and doesn't really take that much time. Most of the recipes done in about 20 minutes or less. It's great.
Hang on. Just looking into it now. They say all the ingredients are exactly pre-proportioned or pre-portioned. They might be pre-proportioned.
I'm not sure what that means.
No. From spices to vegetables, meaning there's absolutely no food waste. And it's a flexible subscription, so I can skip a week or cancel at any time.
Yeah, it's great. Absolutely. And I didn't waste any food at all. Not that I ever would. But I had delicious meals, notably the chicken pasta bake. And I had some left over for lunch the next day and was the envy of the office.
Oh, I wasn't in on that day, right?
No.
So why are you telling me about this now?
Well, because HelloFresh is offering you and the listener, of course, 50% off your first box and 35% off your next three boxes.
Right.
All you have to do is go to hellofresh.co.uk. Use the code FOOTBALLSHOW, that's all one word by the way, to receive 50% off your first box and 35% off your next three.
So that's what?
So that is hellofresh.co.uk, code FOOTBALLSHOW, all one word, to get 50% off the first box and 35% off the next three.
Magic.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker.
This is the Totally Football League Show. Thank you to everyone that's been in touch with us. You can, via social media or any other means, just stop Joe in the street and ask him to sing. To League One, and there's a change at the head of the table. Coventry defeated Sunderland 1-0. Matt Godden scoring after 2 minutes, and they rode it out. Rotherham drew with Milton Keynes to allow the switcheroo at the top. Southend are under an EFL transfer embargo because they owe so much money. They'll owe £668,000 to HM Revenue and Customs by 11th of March, which a further month stacked up behind. Incredible that it's got to that stage. Fleetwood beat Ipswich, leaving Paul Lambert saying the expectancy levels at the club are a big ask for his squad. Blackpool appoint Neil Critchley as we shoehorned into the top as their new coach. And the Beast has become Wickham's top league scorer. Akinfenwa scored during Wanderers' 3-1 loss to Doncaster. Southend.
Yeah, it's a real concern, isn't it? Look, the chairman, Ron Martin, is trying to be bullish about it, saying, look, we're just going to refinance. We'll get everything in place very quickly for this season and it will tide us over for next season. He's talking positively.
Why though, have they got the eighth? He says they've got the eighth highest wage bill in League One.
I'm not completely surprised about that. They've always paid okay at Southend, which is why they should be doing so much better. The recruitment was awful, wasn't it? I think the decision to let Chris Powell go, obviously friend of the show here, let him go, was just a criminal decision, really. And it's been horrendous ever since. Poor old Soul's got nothing to work with at the moment. There's just a bunch of kids that aren't getting paid on time. They're going down. And I honestly believe this. I think if they were in League Two this season, they would be right down there with Stevenage at the bottom of League Two. That's how bad Southend are at the moment. So, look, I desperately hope they'll be okay. I haven't heard anyone say that the future of Southend United is in doubt. Mm. So I take that as a positive.
I see you out the corner of my eye, Joe, just with that sage nod as a Bolton fan. But having, again, as a fan of a club that's seen them go through these sorts of things, and then the whispers and the rumours, and is there another winding up? Is administration coming? There's more money owed. And it just, as a fan, makes you think, God, how do we get out of it? If you don't have someone with a load of cash that's going to come in and buy the club or sort things out instantly, just get stuck back in it.
It just has to be a complete reset. And I think Bolton fans have aligned themselves to the fact that that is what's going to happen. The Bolton are going to go down and clear the decks. Everything's planning for the future, and I think Southend fans have to pretty much get on board with going down this season. They're a ridiculously short price to get relegated and just start again. I think it's 1 to 1,000 to go down, same price as Bolton. So
yeah.
I'll have 1,000 on it.
I'll take that.
Sounds like good finances given everything that we've just discussed. I do want to talk about Blackpool, Neil Critchley coming in, but it seems not financially, but sort of the right time to talk about Ipswich and Paul Lambert's comments that the club's expectations are too high. 33 points from the opening 15 matches, and with the game in hand, they were top of the table. Now just 19 points from 20 games, and now they're ninth. Seemingly, if you throw ninth at Ipswich fans at the start of the season, what would they have thought about that?
They wouldn't have been very impressed with that.
So ninth now, what would their feelings be on Mr. Lambert?
Sack Lambert. I mean, I've looked at all the on the social at the weekend, and they were very much against the manager, against the ownership as well, actually. And obviously the defeat to Fleetwood will have intensified the pressure. It has to go down as one of the daftest decisions in the history of English football or recent history.
To give
Paul Lambert a 5-year deal on New Year's Day in the middle of a winless run. And it's got worse, hasn't it, since then? I mean, I hope for their sake there's some kind of clause in there where they don't have to pay up 5 years of a contract. But I look at the team and I look at his decisions and they are haphazard. It's changing all the time. I mean, 3-5-1-1 last night against Fleetwood, changed it at half-time, brought a kid in for his debut in central midfield, McGavin, hauled him off at half-time, quite unfortunate for the kid, I think, because I don't think he was at fault, changed it again, picked the wrong team, basically, for Fleetwood. And I think that a lot of the supporters believe that he's been picking the wrong team for a number of weeks now.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that game last night and Fleetwood absolutely outclassed them. By the way, I think they're one of the outstanding teams at the moment on form in League One. However, you know, again, I saw Ipswich lose at home to Oxford a couple of weeks ago, and again, they were flat and outplayed, and that's not with my yellow-tinted glasses on either. It's happening time and again. Obviously, James Norwood is out. Caden Jackson suspended, which is their joint top scorers missing for them. But yeah, going back to that point on giving Paul Lambert the 5-year contract at Christmas, doesn't that just underline the level of common sense that we're dealing with here with people who are running football clubs?
Why would any club give any manager a 5-year deal?
Let alone when you're on a terrible run of form and you've been relegated the season before.
And so, is he starstruck or what? I mean, they talked, didn't they, about the connection, bringing Marcus Evans has given Lambert credit for repairing the relationship between the supporters and the club. Well, the fans have been turning out, haven't they? But I think Ipswich should have been at the top end of the table first half of the season anyway. That's what they were. I don't think he's done anything special. Okay, he did a good job earlier on. It's definitely going wrong. I think he's getting himself into more and more of a mess. And they look, and you use the word flat there. That is a common theme. Lack of intensity, not a lot of fight. I mean, these are all signs of a team, of a group of players that aren't really in it for the manager. Have they lost faith in his ability to guide them back into the Championship? It looks to me as if the players have.
They were booed off at the end and they were calling for Lambert out during the game and they were calling for Marcus Evans out during the game. The atmosphere is becoming toxic.
You know, I'd have a manager transfer window. You know, I wouldn't give them any contracts and you just do it in that transfer window period. But who are we to call for managers to be sacked? We would never do that. Fixtures then. Sunderland, Gillingham, Posh Pompey. Who wants to take what?
Good game, isn't it? I mean, Peterborough would be happy to be back at home, I think. They're an incredible home record. I think 14 goals in their last four. But they've had a little blip, haven't they? I think Tony's been out. That's made a big difference. Sammy Smodic, who'd been just ripping it up, he's had a slight dip. I know that the manager had a pop at him at the weekend. I also think they've missed Frankie Kent, who's the centre-half. Formed a really good sort of relationship with Beavers at the back. So different reasons why they've just flattened out a little bit. But this will have a big game feel, won't it? And I would imagine that both teams will be bang up for this.
For me, it's the two strongest squads. Not necessarily teams, but strongest squads meeting in the division. And Pompey, they rested quite a few players, actually, against Arsenal, rightly or wrongly, in the Cup on Monday night. But Kenny Jackett, you know, he made the point they're going to Wembley next month. They're going to have 60-plus games come the end of this season. So they're going to need that squad badly. And, you know, Posh beat Oxford 4-0 after their FA Cup match against Newcastle last month. So, again, they might be playing in Pompey at a good time here after that cup game on Monday night. But interestingly, Portsmouth's only dropped points since New Year's Day have come against Fleetwood and Coventry. So their record against the teams in and around them in the table. And I do genuinely feel this season more than ever in League One, there's a massive gulf between the top half and bottom half. You know, there's a lot of teams that the top half of the table are really wiping the floor with this season. So this has, like you say, got a real big match feel about it. Because I think everybody down to about ninth in that league will feel they can still get into the top two.
Mm. Particularly when you look at it, actually, I wonder how much this plays into your thinking, Joe, but the run-ins that they've all got. Rotherham have got quite a tough one. I know that Sunderland, out of all of them, seem like they've got the nicer run into. At home to Gillingham, this weekend, and I still feel that they can. I think that was huge. That game we were at was huge for a momentum switch. Had Sunderland won that, I had every confidence they were going to go on and go up in that top.
Yeah, I just seeing them in the flesh like that, I felt they had their limitations. Mm. It was a little bit sort of plan A and a bit, there was no real plan B or plan C, and they lacked guile, that's for sure. I think that they're capable of overpowering the weaker teams, as you've rightly pointed out about that golf, but against the teams that have got a little bit extra, Sunderland don't look as good, I have to say. This will be an ugly game. I mean, I think the fourth meeting of the season, we've not had more than two goals in any of the games so far. Yes, Steve Evans will be looking to go on another unbeaten run. Obviously disappointed to lose to Wimbledon. So yeah, I don't think I'd be buying a ticket for this one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Sunderland just don't do it for me. I know they've had a good run and I know they're now in the top six. Fair play to them. But exactly like you say, I think they're functional. But you know, I saw them when they beat Oxford a few weeks ago. This isn't sour grapes, but they scored an early goal and they clung on for 88 minutes. And they were high-fiving and hugging each other when the ball was going out for a goal kick and attacks were breaking down. I'm thinking, you know, this is Sunderland. You shouldn't be behaving like this, you know, against a smaller team, really. But it's funny that this was the turning point in the season for them when they played Gillingham in the reverse fixture earlier this season. They beat them in the league and cup. You had the pictures of a couple of the players in McDonald's eating a burger after the game, and everyone wanted Parkinson out. And that seems to have been the point where it somehow galvanised them and they went on a good run.
Mm. Posh Pompey, Sunderland, Gillingham, then Joe Crilly.
Well, I was just looking at the prices actually for total match goals in the Sunderland-Gillingham game. Mm. Adrian said he'd be surprised to see more than two. We've got 9-4 for two goals, 3-1 for one goal, and 15-2 for a 0-0 draw.
But where's that £1,000 going then?
But just in straight up match odds, Sunderland are odds on to beat Gillingham 4-5, the away side 15-4, and the draw 12-5, and Peterborough versus Portsmouth. Peterborough 6-5 to win at home, Portsmouth 2-1, and the draw 5-2.
Quick word before we leave League One then on Neil Critchley leaving Liverpool's under-23s for Blackpool.
Yeah, well, good luck to him first and foremost, but if, you know, welcome to the big league, so to speak. I know that he's left Liverpool, but it's a different kettle of fish.
A whole world apart.
So his brief is completely different now. It was all about developing players. Now it's all about just winning. Although, you know, you listen to the quotes from the owner, Simon Sadler. Basically, he's saying it was all about his blueprint for the future. He wants to change the philosophy and give Blackpool a clear identity, high intensity, positive front foot attacking football. Loved the sound of that. And in an interview, I bet it sounded awesome. And I hope that they are able to fulfil that. But the problem that a lot of managers like Neil have found down the years is you go in with those ideas, and then suddenly results, to keep your job, you need results and you have to walk away from some of your principles. So interesting times ahead for Blackpool. I hope they can become the team that he dreams they can be. Mm. But I think it will take a lot of work and a really good pre-season working with a group of players he's got. He has got a good group to work with. I think that's in his favour.
And how does it, both of you think it measures up to the names that were linked with it to, or at least asked about it in Richie Wellens and Robinson as well?
I think they're all managers who come with a background of developing players, and maybe that's a sign of where Blackpool want to go, because I think they will be well back next year. Their January signing certainly suggests they've got a bit of financial clout now, but the style of football I think is going to be quite important to them. And you know, when it's a first time managerial job, your first time dealing with senior players, I think you have to give managers time. You look at Michael Appleton, took a few years at various different clubs to finally sort of find his feet as a manager. And you look at like Sir Paul Clement, Michael Jolly at Grimsby, these well-qualified coaches who come with, you know, in the case of Neil Critchley, references from Jurgen Klopp. Well, that's all well and good, but when you're managing Blackpool at Accrington and places like that, you know, you're going to have to grind out results and you're not always going to be able to play great football.
Yeah, the big difference is dealing with grown-ups. It sounds really simplistic, but there'll be a whole fresh set of problems for him. Other than talking to these young players, I think they'll love him on the training ground. By all accounts, he's an amazing coach. He's a truly elite coach on the training ground, but he will have man management issues and big decisions to make, difficult decisions to make. And it's how he handles that side of the job, I think, that will probably make or break it. And hopefully he's got that skill set as well.
And recruitment is key as well, by the way, isn't it? Like recruitment in any job you ask any manager, they have to get the recruitment right. And I think, you know, hopefully with the contacts he's got from his point of view, that'll be fine in the loan market. But yeah, people like Gary Medine, for instance, seasoned professional at that level, should be a great player, but he's probably also going to be an experience to manage.
Mm. So Liverpool out of the Champions League, they win the Premier League, and Mo Salah comes on loan to the end of the season. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, never going to happen. On to League Two then. Well, today's show is sponsored by The Athletic, a subscription-based sports news site for real fans. Through in-depth coverage from local writers on every team like Phil Hay and Nancy Frostick to national writers you already know like David Ornstein and Amy Lawrence, The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news. There are no ads, pop-ups, clickbait, just great sports writing that tells the story behind the story. Get exclusive player profiles, deep dives on analytics, team power rankings, and fantasy sports insights you won't find anywhere else. Each subscriber gets a personalised feed of stories, live writer Q&As, podcasts, and much more. Just download The Athletic app, pick your favourite team, and The Athletic will begin surfacing all the latest on the players and storylines that should matter to you. Ready to get started? Well, for 40%, that's 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/league. That's theathletic.com/league. League Two on the Totally Football League Show. Macclesfield haven't paid their players. Again, it's the fourth time this season it's happened. The PFA have contacted the club about it. Oldham have been served with a winding up petition over unpaid taxes, not affecting them. Though on the pitch, thumping Newport 5-0 at the weekend, leaving Mr. Flynn. He's worried about his job security, apparently. Interesting article on that. A number of the local papers picking up on that too, on Flynn and his future. Swindon remain top of the league after beating Scunthorpe on Tuesday, extending their league lead to 3 points with the game in hand. Exeter and Crewe drew 1-1 with each other. As a result, Plymouth are now in the automatics on goal difference following their victory over Grimsby. That was also on Tuesday. Sam Parkin is not here, but he says, and I quote, "In my absence, please ask Simon all about Swindon and the Ginger Pele's return to form." Simon. Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, as an Oxford United supporter, I'm delighted to see them where they are at the top of the... No, I mean, what a signing permanently. And Jerry Yates as well, by the way, because he might not get the volume of goals of Owen Doyle, but he's certainly, you know, above League Two level, really. Mm. Two goals last night and two really good finishes. The second one in particular, Michael Doughty, though, pulling the strings in midfield. I love him for Swindon. I think he is a good player. I'm going to get a lot of pelters for this much praise, aren't I? But I cannot see them being caught. You know, they're the real deal this year, Swindon, and there's no one, I think, even near their class this year.
That's done and dusted, and he'll save that for his ringtone. So we'll go on to Crewe.
But
Stevie.
It's the 8th anniversary yesterday, by the way, of Oxford beating Swindon 2-0. So just chuck that
nearly,
in.
Just at the end.
Don't cut that out, Abby.
Cut, it's gone. Crewe Stevenage at the weekend and Salford Bradford. Where are you going?
Well, I'm going to talk about Stevenage briefly. I mean... It's really. I don't want to talk about Stevenage.
We don't need to because that noise says it all.
Yeah, exactly. 42 players they've used this season. 42 players. Crewe have used 24. So that tells you quite a lot about the instability. Can't make any case, I'm afraid, for my former team here. Away from home, one win, seven draws, 10 defeats. I mean, they're capable of picking up points, but that was based on a rock-solid defence. They went kind of ultra-defensive, didn't they, under Mark Sampson? They moved away from that under Wesley during that brief stint, and they're continuing to try and play now, but are they good enough? And you have to look at the results and performances and say they're not good enough. They look very sluggish to me at the back. Not a lot of pace, and when I think of Crewe, there's a lot of pace in the Crewe side. So, yeah, I feel a little bit. They've got a couple of loanees, Charlie Lakin from Birmingham, Dan Kemp from West Ham, promising young players. And I feel for them because they're getting a really negative experience in league football, playing for a team that just can't score, can't seem to pick up any wins. So,
is it done?
No, it's not done because of the Macclesfield situation. And you look at that, they've got four suspended points, haven't they, from the initial fine where they got docked six. I mean, if they're paying their players late, what is the point of a suspended penalty if they're not going to implement it. I expect that 4-point penalty to come into play, which brings them much closer to Stevenage. So no, I think there is every reason for Stevenage players not to give up on this fight.
8 points behind them at the moment, but Stevenage got a game in hand too.
Yeah, I mean, you only have to look back to 3 years ago, Michael Flynn, as we were talking about in his first managerial job. So a similar situation to the one Alex Revell has walked into and you know, kept them up miraculously. I mean, it would take a miracle, I think, on the pitch, unless Macclesfield are deducted points for Stevenage to stay up, because, you know, Morecambe look fast improving under Derek Adams as well. It's just they've looked completely lost all direction, haven't they, really? A club lauded for its leadership at Stevenage down the years, but, you know, four different managers this year. And, you know, he's got Russell Slade working alongside him, so an experienced head there too. But yeah, I can't see it happening really.
Yeah, you talk about crew, right? 4-3-3 pretty much every week. 4-3-3 Stevenage, just the 11 different formations this season. They haven't used the same, they haven't used one system more than 7 times, I noticed. So I mean, it's little wonder they look such a mess. It's there's absolutely no tactical stability there at all.
That Salford Bradford game. For Salford, 47 points. So they're what, 6, 7, 8, 9 points off at the moment off those playoffs. Bradford just above them, but on 54 points as well, just above them in the league, but with those that point advantage too. Is that Salford? So there's your little bit. So
well, that makes Bradford favourites.
Exactly, because of that Bradford pitch. But there are such high demands on this Salford team. I just don't feel it this season.
What? No, but I think I think there's a lot they can feel proud about, Salford. I think they'll be fine moving forwards. I'd fancy them next season to have a much better push.
And the cup run does it.
They've recruited players that are probably not at the level. They've recruited League One players, I think, Salford. So in time they'll be fine. They've probably left it too late. Home form's been the issue. I mean, they've been rubbish on home territory, which has been a surprise. A bit sensational away from home, aren't they? Incredibly hard to beat. So this is a really fascinating game, because Bradford will be buzzing after beating Plymouth. And yeah, that pitch at Bradford, I mean, God, goodness me, that was just a stinker, wasn't it? But fair play, and they'll be pleased to be away from it.
Salford winning one of their last 8 at home, 4 overall this season.
Yeah, I followed Salford quite closely because I worked on the documentary with them last year. And I think Graham Alexander is in a difficult situation having come up this season, because it was back-to-back promotions. Mm. He took over the side last year that had just come up, and there were players they showed loyalty to, like Carl Pierre Gianni, like Liam Hogan, a few of the squad that got them back-to-back promotions. But realistically, probably weren't at the level then to take them on into League One. So he was kind of caught in a scenario where it was always likely to be a transition of, OK, let's give these guys a chance and see what they can do out of, you know, goodwill. However, you know, they're probably going to have to make the kind of signings like they did in January now to take them up to the next level. But, you know, they're always a club that is going to want probably more than they can get at this stage. And I think that's the kind of issue where it makes it very difficult as their manager. But
did you like the way, and I saw this in the trophy game, the way he tactically approaches things, Alex? And if you were sat with him in the dressing room, I kind of feel like you listen, you understand, you see what he's trying to do, and you buy into it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got calmness about him. Yeah. But he's definitely got an edge, because there are bits I saw that didn't make it to the telly.
Oh, really?
But he's definitely got an edge. Yeah. But, you know, he's anyone to expect a team, even when you've got the financial backing of Salford City, to go for 3 straight promotions. The Football League's very different as well, I think, isn't it? And,
yeah,
you know, from their perspective as well, you know, they've got a trip to Wembley Stadium. By the way, they've only got 3,000 tickets for that game at Wembley, where I think Pompey have already sold over 35,000 tickets
incredible.
For that one. But, yeah, you know, you sometimes forget that for all their financial clout, you know, this is a club that were only 5-6 years ago getting 200 people through the gate.
It's a really small club, yeah. When you go there, you think, yeah, you know about their ambition, but you think, well, this is probably a non-league size club, Salford City. So they're doing really well. I think they've got one of the best managers in the division, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I really rate Alexander. This will be a fascinating game, because Salford, like we said, are poor at home. Bradford are rubbish on the road. I think it's 5 months since they won away. So they've got a point to prove to Stuart McCall, who's kind of, you get the feeling that he'll get the fire burning again with the Bantams. So, yeah, this is, I see a few goals in this game.
So we're saying with Salford, it actually wouldn't hurt. Everyone wants to go up when you can go up, right? But it actually wouldn't hurt to be in that league for another season. Enjoy that moment at Wembley, whatever comes with that.
I remember, Joe, we were talking about Salford at the start of the season with the odds and stuff. And Salford, weren't they favourites? Or they were really high
second favourites behind Bradford.
Yeah, really high up. I think me and Sam both agreed, no chance, they're not going to go up this year. In this summer coming, I think they should start a shorter price than they started last year, because I would quietly fancy them at least for the playoffs next year.
Should we cut down the odds maybe and just focus on this weekend then? For the moment, Joe. Salford, Bradford.
Salford favourites to win at even money. Bradford are 11-4 with a draw 5-2.
And Crewe, Stevenage?
Crewe, you won't be surprised to hear, are incredibly short. 1-2 to get the win at home. Stevenage 11-2 and the draw 17-5.
And for the benefit of Sam Parkin, with Swindon top, Crewe second, Plymouth in third at the moment, odds on promotion?
Promotion, Swindon 1-20 for promotion. Crewe 2-7, Exeter 4-9. So they are the ones that we think will be top three, with Plymouth 4-7 to go up. Fourth favourite, so the odds suggest that they will have to do so via the playoffs. But the other teams in and around are Cheltenham 11-10, Northampton 7-2, Colchester 4-1.
Thank you, Joe. Simon, this is just an opportunity for you to plug that documentary again, because we have other big documentary news coming up. So yours is, or can people still see it?
Well, I was a small cog in the wheel, it's already been out, but they're working on another one for the end of this year.
But
so,
can you still see it?
I think you can still see it on Sky on catch-up, just search Salford City. I think, it's on Sky catch-up, I'm pretty sure it is. Joe's nodding.
Yes, I recently finished something, a box set on Netflix, and I was looking for something else to watch, and I noticed it popped up on Sky.
I mean, I'll take that as a compliment.
No, well, I've already seen it. I would watch
Sunderland
it again.
Documentary, hadn't you? And then you thought,
which is the other big football documentary news.
Okay,
Sunderland Till I Die season 2 arrives on April the 1st. And no, we didn't do that on purpose, says the official press release. Right, nothing else to discuss then. That brings this week's show to a close. Thank you, Joe Crilly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian Clark.
Yep, see ya.
Thank you, Simon. I was a small part cog in that wheel of that documentary. Will we hear you, see you, EFL on Quest?
This weekend. I'm back in the studio watching Oxford, basically.
Is that work?
It's a contractual obligation.
Of course. And
that's
enjoy
what people
it and
believe
work
anyway.
Shout. Yeah, quite. Thank you, Simon. Anyway, Sam's back next week. Thank you for your company too. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Join Ruby Walsh, Tom Nugent and Paddy Power on their racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth, as they build up to the 2020 Cheltenham Festival each week. New episodes every Friday.
Muddy Knees Media.